Hello, friends, loyal listeners, and bears everywhere. This is The Sound Barrier. We welcome you to another episode coming to you from the lovely studios, the Entertainment Technology Department here in the Technology Education Complex on our Bluntville campus. Friends in Entertainment Technology always doing a great job for us. And if you're looking for a major, look into Entertainment Technology. In this episode, we welcome the Dean of our Technologies Division, Dr. Donna Farrell. Really pleased to have her with us today to talk all things technology and how the world is changing kind of right before our eyes. Donna, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We're delighted you're here. Now, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to arrive here at Northeast State.
Well, I've been here at Northeast State for about six, almost 7 years now. I came in 2015, started as an adjunct faculty member for computer science. And from there, there was someone who retired, and I got that position as a full-time faculty member, and I've been here since then. I've been dean since August of last year, 2021, and filled the interim dean position prior to that for about 7 months.
Now, what I know your background is in information technology. What kind of got you interested in that? I also know a few things about you. You're very much skilled in many trades, shall we say. But what about information technology that kind of piqued your interest?
That's kind of an odd story, actually. When I was in college, I actually went to college on a music scholarship, and I got to college. We did things like juries where you would sit and play your instrument for a huge auditorium of four or five people who would, you know, send you instructions from the dark depths and all that practicing in the little rooms. And I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would. And I went to the counselors there. And back at that time, they said that computer science was a booming and upcoming industry, and that was the place to be. And I signed up for computer science and changed my major to computer science and a minor in music.
What instrument or instruments did you play?
Piano, guitar, mandolin, saxophone, and a tiny bit of drums.
Oh, drums as well. Sweet. What was the transition like from music? What kind of have its own, I guess, system of how you play and go about doing things into information technology?
I think it's kind of similar, and if you talk to a lot of computer science folks, like the faculty that we have in this building, most of them can play one or two or three instruments. It's really interesting that people who are musically inclined really lean toward computer science types of jobs and careers as well. And I think having that structure that you follow when either you're practicing or learning an instrument, you would do so in computer science, but you get to be creative as well. And so you have that creativity part where, you know, you can just sit down and try to pick out something that's melodic to you that you really enjoy listening and creating. And you can do the same things with a program or a network as well.
Technology's kind of encompasses here in this division, it goes from automotive to aviation to information technology, of course, HVAC, many things. What kind of person is interested in technology-driven fields that you've found just in your experience and kind of the students you've met over the years?
Everybody seems to have some kind of interest in something in this building. Even people who aren't in careers that we offer here come in and said, oh my goodness, if something like this had been in place when I was in college, I would have done this. For the most part, we see students who are not interested in going to a four-year college. They come here and they excel with actually doing hands-on activities every single day. We're very lab-focused in the division. We also have people who are being retooled who may have lost their jobs due to whatever has happened in the past 3 to 5 years. Those more non-traditional students who are over the age of 35 come to us to learn a new skill set, and they can do that pretty quickly either with the certificate program or with the AAS degree. Most certificates we can finish in 1 year, and the two-year degree if you're coming full-time, and at night we have a four-year night plan if you can only come for a couple of classes in the evenings.
Now, the technologies division, I guess even when you came here when as an adjunct faculty member, we did not have the building we're sitting in at that time. Of course, the technical education complex, just a terrific building that we love, houses all our program, most all our programs now. How has this building been a game changer for faculty members and students in the way, just the way the curriculum is delivered and some of the opportunities they have here now?
This building sits at about 114,000 square feet. Our largest lab is the machine tool CNC lab, just over 10,000 square feet. And as well, upstairs we have a state-of-the-art data center that actually maintains classrooms on the second floor. It's the only one in the state of Tennessee, a community college with an operating functional data center. And I think it's the only one in the United States. I'm yet to find a community college with one. But when you walk in this building and you see through the glass into the classrooms, the opportunities actually come at you. It's kind of hard to explain unless you've walked in the building. It's just a beautiful space. And when you come in, you see all of the students, you know, they're either in the labs, they may be working with the PLCs, they may be doing some CNC. We have a very large welding lab with 36 booths. It's just a building that welcomes people, but it's also a building that you start thinking about what opportunities it may give you just by being here.
And if you haven't visited our campus to see the building, people need to come out and see it. Yes,
they do. Absolutely. I will be happy to give anyone a tour. Just give me a call.
Absolutely. Check in all the labs. I'm sure that people will enjoy it. Now, being in, I know you've been in the information technology industry for a while. What do you see? How have trends that you saw kind of happening, say, 10 years ago, how have they come to fruition, and what do you see the kind of trends developing here in the next 5 years or so?
So in the past, we've seen programming, networking, cyber defense starting to develop more as being popular for students. In the past few years, cyber defense has been big because we hear on the news, you know, a lot, ransomware, different kinds of facilities being under attack, and it's all by, you know, cyber problems or malicious attacks that people are doing. So if we look into the next few years, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics is indicating that we're going to see yet another 11% growth in computer science jobs. But we're looking a little bit differently now into cloud computing, which is one of those terms people talk about all the time. Everything's in the cloud now. Information security, which is cyber defense. We're trying to keep all of that data where it needs to be and not let it get out on the internet or be hacked. Data collection is a big one because we're always looking at data analytics, for example. So if you're out there on Google and you notice that you were searching for something, that something always seems to pop up in those little spaces when you're back out there searching again. And so things like that are going to be big, but we're also going to see machine learning and artificial intelligence as well become even larger than they are right now.
Now, I was talking to someone about some things we offered, and I mentioned the Internet of Things, and they said, "What's that?" So, if you want to just explain to the folks at home what the Internet of Things, what that means, and what that's really about.
I would love to. You know, we get that a lot. It's like, that can't actually be a major, right? But it actually is. In computer science, and you think about the internet itself, there are a lot of sensors where we collect data from. So let's think about something really popular now, like you've seen the doorbells that are connected to your phone, and they have a little camera, and I can talk to whoever's at my door through my phone and that little doorbell and that video camera, right?
Oh, yes.
So that's all connected through the internet. as well as sensors. So here in this building, we're working on some collaboration between curriculums where we can put sensors in areas at more of a manufacturing scenario and be able to record the data in the computer science department. So anything connected to the internet, whether it's a doorbell ring, a video, collecting things in manufacturing, like how many of something we've created on the shop floor that day, anything that connects back to the internet then becomes the Internet of Things. And with that, we teach students first an introduction to all the many things that encompasses that. Then we have to learn about security, how we keep all those things secured so that anyone with malicious intent, you know, won't hack our doorbell, for example. How do we keep that safe? Or how do we keep all of the data that's in your hospital record safe or in our manufacturing floor safe? So we have to look at security as well, and then how we can grow and adapt. And so the Internet of Things is a really interesting class, or all the classes are interesting. It's a really good program. And we actually have many students who are programmers or networks curriculum majors, and they'll double major with IoT, and it makes a really nice little bundle for when you leave campus and go out looking for a job.
Yeah, the whole term Internet of Things, it's kind of a process explaining to people. But once you understand it, it's fascinating
stuff. Thanks for asking. I love that question.
Now, in the world of information technology, and I know we've certainly gone through Zoom and all these different, stages of it. Like you said, we're certainly moving into artificial intelligence. How is it affecting human relationships, or is it, or how, what do you hear from people just in the industry or personally about how is it changing how we see each other or how we kind of communicate with each other? Or is it, for that matter?
Well, I think we're learning how not to communicate well with others right now. And that's because the amount of screen time that most people spend with their device. And so now, you know, if you have an Apple device, it tells you, hey, you've increased your screen time this much of a percent since last week. Something, here are some things you might want to do. So we've recognized that spending all that time with their device and not with other people in a social interaction can be detrimental. So some of the things that we do at camp, and we can talk about our camps in more detail, but we don't do a lot of screen time with just, you know, an individual iPad or a phone. Instead, we take our campers out and we put them into the labs and let them do hands-on activities where we build catapults, for example. They get to fabricate, they get to use the drill press. We have an upcoming workshop in welding in a couple of weeks on the 26th. And so we want students to learn that there are other things out there besides that screen. And I remember when I was growing up, you know, Tom, we didn't have the screen, that we didn't have the device.
Oh, no.
Instead, we had our bicycles and motorcycles and played in the, you know, outside all the time and interacted with each other that way. And so it's a little bit different now because folks will get together and they'll game, and that's the way they socially interact.
Oh, yeah, it's a different world. But like you said, we seem to be finding ways not to communicate well sometimes, but hopefully we can see that improve. Now, speaking of camps, I know we've got several coming up this year. There's Women in Manufacturing, which is happening with our friends at the Southwest Virginia Center for Higher Education, mm-hmm. I believe in March. And I think there's another one we're hosting here in April.
That's correct.
If you want to talk about those, we'd love to hear about them.
So let's talk about those. So Women in Manufacturing is an event that's been around a few years, and we have a panel of women from industry, whether they're, you know, in manufacturing, aviation, whatever it may be, and they come as panelists. We have a keynote speaker from manufacturing, whatever industry it may be. And then we invite, you know, all of the women in the area that work in any of those type of career fields, whether they're in computer science, accounting, business, they're a welder, they may be a machine tool operator, whatever it is, they're welcome to come. And we have a really great time. We do a lot of activities together, and it's just a really good time where these women meet other people. So here we are socializing, like we were just talking about, and learning what other people do and how we can support each other. So like you said, we have one coming up in March that'll be in Abingdon, and then we'll be hosting one here in the Technical Education Complex in late April.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, it seems to be good to getting people at least back together in the same room physically again. So let's hope we can continue that. Now, I also understand that our aviation technology department has a new partner. There's some really good things happening in that department, but a new partner coming in, I believe, in February to talk to some aviation students.
That's exactly right. Can I talk more about camp and then kind of blend into that? Will that be okay?
Yes, yes, let's do that.
So we've had workshops each month we're having for this semester, and aviation is the first workshop that we had in January. And the workshop was for grade 7 through 12 young ladies, and at the new hangar, the NSA, the Northeast State Aviation area out at the airport. And we spent the day doing everything from learning how to pop rivet, working on airframe, to actually getting to fly in a Cessna thanks to flight and retired Lieutenant Colonel Pauly, who came out and gave us flights that day. And it was a wonderful time. So now we're looking into February. We'll be doing welding on the 26th of this month. And then we're doing automotive and computer science, and we're going to do electrical, and ending all those up in May. And we get into June, we're going to be doing our Girls Rule Technology Camp the week of June 13th, which is very popular. And then that same week, we're doing Boys Rock Technology Camp for boys in 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. So we're doing that camp the week of the 13th. And then going into the fall semester, we've received funding to add more workshops on Saturdays. In addition, we've got the Scouts coming in for the Merit Badge University in March and in November.
Oh,
which
nice.
Should be a lot of fun as well. So, you know, we try to do a lot of community involvement and have our young people in to see, you know, what careers we actually have available that they may not think of every day. You know, you may not think of entertainment technology and what I can do with that, or that I could be a mechanic for an airplane, or even that I could go into machine tooling. They may not know what those careers are. And then moving into aviation, coming up this month on the 24th, PSA, Pacific Southwest Airlines, will be coming in to do a recruitment event. We have two students in our first cohort now who have actually passed their certification with the FAA. And if you don't know, the aviation program is FAA certified in power plant and airframe, the only community college in the state of Tennessee to do so. And we have those two students who will be graduating soon, and people want them. It's, you know, they've had job offers already. And so we'll have a number of partners come in for different recruiting events for that particular program. And we do the same thing in the TEC for all of our programs, so that students have some opportunity to meet with employers and talk with them before they actually graduate.
Can you talk a little bit about how important it is to keep growing those relationships with industry, with the both private sector and public sector?
It's very important for us to work with industry to help that employee pipeline. You know, we have 302 new apprentices this semester with Eastman that work through the RCAM and do all of their labs and testing there. We have co-op that has opened back up with Eastman. We also have multiple partners we do capstone studies with. Kentronics is one that the computer science department is working with this semester. And the importance of having those partnerships and those relationships is not only a benefit for us with our students, but also for the companies themselves, being able to have access to students that have learned the skills that they need.
Changing gears just a little bit, what are the best ways that you've found to teach kind of critical thinking skills to students? Or I mean, everyone, everyone kind of learns differently. Every individual kind of learns at a different rate. What is kind of the best method you've found, or methods you've found to teach those skills and help people understand subject matter?
In most of our labs, we like to do that hands-on, this is how you do something. So first, the instructors in most of the programs will talk about what we're going to create, build, do, what we want to accomplish. From there, they will often show a video to help people who, you know, actually like to see that happen first. They'll often demonstrate it, yet another way that we can get a hands-on approach and show it through overhead with the equipment that we have in the building. And once we've done that, then they have the ability to read what they're going to do, and then they actually sit down and do it. And so having all of those things together usually will capture most of the students who are either more, they actually need to read for themselves, or they need to be able to see to pull in the information. And so we actually have professional development with their faculty and instructors talking about the different areas and how they can build those so that they include more students in that process.
Now, this kind of goes to the way of critical thinking, but in a roundabout way, I know your career at one time took you to Wyoming, and could you talk a little bit about that experience, including, if you will, my favorite story, the moose story, which I love. It's one of my favorite stories of any faculty member.
Everybody loves my moose story. I'll have to tell you my rattlesnake story sometime, but the moose story is good. I was working out in the pit mine in Wyoming, a coal mine, and on a Saturday, I was the only one on call that day, and I forget where everybody else was. It was some event out there. And I noticed that we don't have connectivity, or we're sending traffic across the geographic mesh network. Mm-hmm. And so sadly, when I, got down into the pit, there was a big bull moose, and you don't really realize how large those are until you're pretty close to one. I didn't get out of the truck. But the antennas were sitting on a sled, and it's a sled much like, with the runners on it. It was just much larger so that it could accommodate an antenna. And the reason we do that is because in the mesh network at a pit mines, that geography changes continually through the day.
Right.
And somehow he had gotten down into the pit and couldn't figure out how to get out, and was headbutting the sled, which then got it out of alignment with the rest of the network. And I often tell people, you sit in your computer science classes and you learn about, troubleshooting, but nobody ever says, hey, in case of moose, this is what you should do. And it was, I was sad for the moose, and I ended up, calling back up to the main office. And these things happen every so often, and they have a person on call that comes, and they tranquilize the moose and load him up in a big truck and take him out of the pit and back to where the moose should be. And so it ended up, as a good story. He went back to where he should be, and we got the mesh network up and running, and we were down a couple of hours, which, is still something you have to be cautious and think about, because when you're down and have any downtime in any way, that can often cost the company money.
Now, the mining industry?
It was the mining industry. This was about 15 years ago.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Josh Johnson, our friend up in who also works at Northeast State, can tell you, don't mess with moose.
Don't mess with moose.
Stay away from them.
You're dangerous
right. Animals. But now, and yes, a funny story, interesting, of course, but do you use that story to kind of explain to students, look, you may face a lot of different things that are going to require problem solving out there?
What's great about stories and problem solving techniques is that when I was teaching, I never thought that the stories would help students learn components and how to create something and how to troubleshoot. But sure enough, if I added something that came from when I worked in industry, they would always remember when they were doing, a hands-on lab, what they needed to do, because the moose, for some reason, kept them very entertained. And then when we talked about all the components that go along with the infrastructure of the network, how you have to have line of sight, whatever it may be to get all those things working, then it helps them with their troubleshooting skills. And ironically, we were having our ATMEI certification review, and we had folks here, and they choose students to interview for those things. And they chose one of my students, and he told them the Moose story and how he'll never forget how that particular type of network actually functions. And that was like a bonus point, I think, on our AppMe reaccreditation, because the student, you know, that was what they remembered, which I'm all about that.
So it went well. Now, as we kind of move forward here in the future, what do young women and young men need to know about a technical career that when you say technology or a technical career, it doesn't mean you have to be an expert in calculus, but there you can come and learn something in a technical career that's very applicable to our daily lives, and it's not like something they should be intimidated by. How do we kind of get that message out to people? I know obviously with the camps and things, we want to do that.
That is such a good question, Tom. I brought my mom and dad here to see the building, I know, when we moved into it. And Dad said, you know, this must be like, you know, a big field day for you. You must love coming to work every day. Because when I was little, you know, even tiny, I worked on cars with Dad. You know, we rebuilt engines. You know, he helped me with my first motorcycle as far as learning how to ride. We did welding. He taught me how to weld. He taught me so many things that when I come into this building, people are doing every day. And so he built confidence in me at a very young age. And that's what we have to do with our youth today. Instead of, you know, watching and doing for them, it's okay that we make a mistake when we're doing it. And so when we bring the campers in and they take apart computers, at first they're really kind of skittish about it. They don't want to break anything. And then as we explain to them, this is, you know, it's okay. Let's take all the parts out. We're going to learn what they are, and then we're going to put them all back. And hopefully it's going to work when we get done. But if it doesn't, we're going to learn from that. And so our goal with camps and workshops is to build confidence in the students, regardless of the age. And that's what my dad did with me and my mom as well. They, regardless of what I was doing when I was little, if I made a mistake or did it wrong, Dad would say, okay, let's look at this and see how we could have done it better. And I never felt like I was, you know, in a position where I was afraid to touch something or to do something, because, you know, it was always a learning process, and he built that confidence at a young age. And that's what we try to do when we have students come here. We've got to build the confidence for them so that they're interested in a career that they may have not have known existed. People isolate technology now into like computers, and that's about it. They look at, you know, that's what technology, IT is. And actually, when you come into this building, you see technology is so much more. It's automotive, it's auto body, motorsports, aviation, entertainment technology, APT, which is administrative professional technology. You may not know that we have, you know, medical coding office here. We have legal office, business accounting, management, drafting, engineering design. You know, one of the big things that's happened in the last, well, I think everything that students do and accomplish are big, so we have a lot of them. But in our drafting area, we have students who created a new amphitheater, and then they won funding through the Lowe's grant for us to build it. So we're going to be, you know, revamping that area this summer so that in the fall we have this beautiful new amphitheater out there. And it's because of instructors and students in the building that we get to do those things. Again, building confidence so that when they go out and they apply for a job and they get an interview, they have some background. They've done some things. They've put it on their resume. Our capstone classes send them out to work, you know, in different areas with different partners. So we keep trying to build that confidence.
All right, which is it's the relationship between the employers, the people that see what they're doing. They see there's tons of students we're turning out. Now, also, why should some people at least learn how to ride a motorcycle?
Well, I'm not sure that everybody should learn to ride a motorcycle. I taught, for Harley-Davidson Riding Academy and Tennessee's Motorcycle Safety Foundation, the beginner class and advanced classes. I have found people who realized that motorcycles were not for them. But if you want to, if you have any idea that a motorcycle might be something that you're interested in, then go to a class for sure, so that when you're in a controlled environment and you have instructors that have spent a lot of time, you know, getting certified, making sure that you're safe, that's the place to figure out if you should ride a motorcycle, not putting yourself out into the traffic. So there are people that shouldn't be on a motorcycle. My dad's one of them, God love his heart. But he taught me, you know, when I was little, and then off I went. So I love that. Thanks, Dad. Love that a bunch.
Because you've been riding for a while. You have a Harley, right?
I have a couple of different lovely motorcycles. I do have a really pretty Harley.
Sweet.
That I love to ride. My husband and I spent 32 days going cross country in 2019 and had a fabulous time in the national parks. Saw the other, you know, all the way out to California, Oregon, Washington. It's absolutely joyous for me. And that's something that I don't think I'll ever stop. You know, when I get too old to ride on two wheels, we'll just get three, I guess.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the motorcycle is, yeah, there's something unique about that machine that you can't really put into words all the time.
I love my motorcycles.
We now come to our rapid fire question.
Okay.
Part of our show.
I think I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
We're just going to do one.
Oh, yay, okay.
Just one. If you could have any superpower, what would that be?
I would like to be able to understand any language I hear and be able to speak that language back to the person.
Nice. That would be an awesome superpower.
Languages are so hard, and I've tried to learn, you know, a couple of different ones, and it's a challenge. And that's, I've always thought how wonderful that would be, that regardless of where I was, I could understand and then have a conversation with someone. Because I love to travel, and often it's a little challenging.
A great practical superpower. Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Donna, we're coming to the end of this episode. We thank you so much for joining us here on the Sound Barrier. It's been really illuminating, and we know you're one of the bright lights on this campus and have been for some time, and just appreciate everything you and the Technologies Division do.
Thank you for your kind words, Tom, and I appreciate the confidence that our administration has put in me. It's very humbling. So thank you so much.
Well founded indeed. Well, friends, that's the end of another episode of The Sound Barrier. We thank you for joining us. You can check us out all our episodes at thesoundbarrier.com or thesoundbarrier.net. And if you're interested in the major, including entertainment technology, which falls under the Technologies Division, go to northeaststate.edu. That's northeaststate.edu. Go to our academic divisions. Check out our academic programs, degrees, technical certificates. It's all right there, northeaststate.edu. Until next time, we'll see you again, and keep listening to The Sound Barrier.